And that was, you were going from where to where?
From Washington National to San Francisco.
Let me take care of that in a minute.
Okay. I'm sorry. Check it out.
To San Francisco?
Right.
And as we started to land, the airplane had a problem. The nose wheel wouldn't come down. And so we had to go into full emergency procedures. And what that consisted of was taking sharp things out of your pocket, like your keys and any knives or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And your shoes. You had to take your shoes off and put them into these blankets. The stewardess came down and you had to put everything in these blankets. And then you had to put your head down between your knees for the actual landing, because
this was commercial flight.
Yeah, this was a commercial flight on a 707. And I take it back. The nose wheel did come down, but it lost hydraulic, so it didn't have any control. It couldn't steer it. And so we had to go into this full approach and put your head down between your knees. And in a way, there was no incident. We rolled out. It just took a long time because he didn't want to try to turn anything. And then they sent one of those airport haulers to come pick you up, pick your airplane back. But they let us off. And it was quite a scene and quite a sight to try to find your shoes and your personal effects back from all these blankets. I mean, this was a... This was a mess.
And Dr. Von Braun was on.
Well, he was. He and I were the only two from Washington on this particular trip. We're going out to the West Coast centers. Yeah, we were going to Ames and JPL on that trip, as I recall.
So Dr. Von Braun, I mean, along with everybody else, was
digging for your shoes and your personal effects.
Did he have any comment to make about that?
Well, I don't recall any comments, but I think it was the same trip. On the way back, we came back from L.A. to Washington. And we got on the airplane, and, as a government employee, you fly coach. And the pilots recognized them and insisted we come up with first class. So we had a nice free first class flight coming back to Washington National.
Great. Was that was during his years in Washington?
Yeah, right. That was part of the Washington year. The Washington years were kind of tough. The Washington bureaucracy was tough. He was asked to come up there by Tom Paine.
Right.
And it was great with Tom Paine there. I mean, Tom Paine was a great Werner supporter. And we had to put together this long range plan for the agency.
Mm-hmm.
And this major input for this long range plan was a conference that Tom Paine had set up, and it turned out to be a long weekend. It was like 5 days, and it took place at Wallops. And we had all the thinkers, long range thinkers in the agency come give their view of the center, of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Paine, in his wisdom, picked Arthur Clarke, the science fiction writer, to be kind of a keynote speaker to kick this thing off. And Werner and I talked about it, is that Clarke, in that environment, Clarke was very subdued. I mean, he was fiction, and here's all these guys who really were doing it,
Is that right?
Yeah, Clarke was rather quiet, although he gave his talk and everything. But all through all the discussions and everything, he just hung back and listened. Von Braun's part of the presentation, he had this nuclear propulsion idea. He had a deal whereby you would have this, say you're going on a trip to Mars, you'd have a big vehicle, and on the back end of the vehicle you'd have a pressure plate. And then you would spit out of the center of this plate, you would spit like aspirin-size nuclear matter. And then you would have maybe two or three lasers that were aimed at this thing, so that at some specific distance from that pressure plate, these lasers would cause this little atomic bomb to explode, you know, this aspirin size. And of course, then the pressure would hit the plate, so you'd be flying forward with that, you know, this little...
These constantly explosive
forces,
yeah.
So this was his contribution at that time in the future of using this this nuclear propulsion device. And anyway, this thing put together, they put together a plan, you know, resulting from this meeting, that was a very tightly held pocket-sized book, you know, of the long-range plan. And Tom Paine took that package over to the Nixon White House to try to sell his long-range plan, you know, and make it, get the space program bigger and better. And it didn't work. I mean, Nixon was up to his butt in alligators with, you know, the
Watergate business. And all that, yeah.
And so the word, obviously the word came back that you're just supposed to, you know, continue on like you are, you know.
Maintain.
Yeah, maintain. Keep it on an even keel. And while I never got any direct feedback from Tom Paine on that meeting, it was just a matter of a few weeks after that Tom Paine-Nixon meeting that Tom Paine decided to leave the agency.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to GE to become the head of nuclear power plants at GE when he left. As an aside here, just, oh, I guess it's still quite a few years away, previous now, but 6 or 8 years ago, Reagan appointed Tom Paine to head up some long-range planning, you know, with a bunch of industrial leaders and so forth, and he worked for 6 or 8 months and put together a plan, and it's been published. You know, and it's 90% the same as this plan he presented to Nixon, you know, back in the late
70s. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was his plan before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still his plan, you know. but anyway, so Tom Paine left, and then George Low became acting administrator of NASA for an extended period, kind of like Carolyn Greiner. It must have been 8 or 10 months or a year. I don't remember exactly what happened. And then he brought in Dr. Fletcher as the next permanent administrator. But there was this extended interim where George Lowe was the acting director. And Werner and Lowe had problems. I don't know that it's necessarily personal, but I don't think Lowe ever forgave Werner from the Nazi connection. You know.
Lowe was Jewish.
Right.
I say was. I don't know if he's still
living. No, he's not living anymore.
But he was Jewish.
He was Jewish. And he also...
Couldn't get over the Third Reich.
I think that's to a degree. But then Lowe, I mean, that's one facet. The second facet, while Lowe came into the agency originally at Lewis, you know, Lowe then moved to Houston and was the spacecraft, in Apollo, he was the spacecraft project manager.
Right.
So he had that Houston plant, you know, so I think with the combination of the, you know, the Jewish question and JSC slant, somehow that never really worked too well. And I think it was in that time frame that von Braun decided to leave NASA and go to Fairchild.
I'm trying to recall what Jim Daniels' take was on Lowe, and I think he said, that, you know, it was his feeling that Lowe may have even intimated this, if not said it, that he was prepared not to like von Braun, you know, until he met him, and then after he got to know him better, that he personally developed respect for him.
Well, that may well
but
be.
But still may in the back of his mind,
yeah.
And all this other business. Yeah.
Well, also the fact that, you know, clearly, you know, after this Tom Paine-Nixon meeting, I mean, the thing was to keep it on a level keel. You know, you don't go off on all these big plans that was in this long-range plan. So, you know, Lowe had the mandate, in effect, being only an acting administrator, too, to kind of keep the place going level. So,
right.
You know, then what did you need this Von Braun Tiger team of long-range planners, you know? So Werner very quickly came to the conclusion that, you know, the long-range plan was in place. It was being there, and, you know, the government, the country, the world could attack that kind of at whatever pace the politicians decided they wanted to attack it.
Sure.
And that, therefore, you didn't really need any long-range planning for the immediate future, for the near-term future, because here's this 20-year plan, and it may take you 50 years
sure.
You know, so that's when Werner decided, you know, to go to Fairchild, and, you know, Fairchild had that program with India at the time, you know, to put up a communication satellite over India and beam educational TV into the Indian countryside.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And so Fairchild gave him the task of being the liaison interface with India. And so Werner's last years were spent a lot of time traveling to India and working with Mrs. Gandhi at the time. And
is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that may be where, was it Margaret made her Indian contact?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what, you know, I don't know how she...
Right.
But Werner had a lot of Indian interface during his last years.
You know, he'd been preaching or floating the ideas about satellite educational lessons into remote villages in India and elsewhere for a long time. Yeah.
Even to the point where you know, Mrs. Gandhi tried to get bicycle-generated television sets into these little remote villages that didn't even have electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could put a television set, say, up in the village square somewhere, and, you know, from 5 to 6 or 5 to 7 in the evening, you know, everybody could come out and sit around the town square, and people take turns pedaling this bicycle and receive the TV screen, the TV picture from the satellite. And, you know, Werner tried to help, you know, educate the people throughout the countryside and work back and forth with the Indian government in those last years.
Mm-hmm.
He also, and this was the last time I saw him alive, he was on the board of directors of some Decatur bank. And he came down here one time, and by serendipity, I happened to be going to Washington. We got on the same airplane. Of course, he was no longer a government employee, so he could be up in first class, and I was back in and he invited me to come sit with him. So I did. I came to sit with him. And I thought this was rather interesting. So I'm sitting there, and pretty soon the stewardess saw us and recognized that I was not a first-class passenger, so she wouldn't let me sit there. And she insisted I go back to my seat, and Werner got up and came back in the back. He came back and sat with me the whole trip to Washington. And that
is that right?
Yeah, that
just
was
a visit.
Just a visit. You know, this was after, you know, I'm back here working, and he's...
Is he with Fairchild?
Yeah, he was with Fairchild, and he was down here on bank business. And, you know, I don't know when this was. This was probably 73, 74 time frame. But he died in 75.
Right. 75 or 77. Because he was 65 years old. He was born in 1912. Anyway, that,
yeah, okay.
Your point is well taken.
Anyway, that was that's another long story. We're on my list here.
Oh, now the business with the Indian, the satellite educational program, that came to pass.
Yes,
and that
it did.
Was implemented, and he was part of that.
I'm not sure he was still alive when the satellite actually flew.
Mm-hmm.
That satellite was flown, I forget what the name of that thing was, but it had two missions. It was flown over to U.S. for like a year, and had to do something in the communications world here, and then they dog-legged it over India and to do its Indian job.
Now, how do you do that?
Well, it had, you know, they have some propulsion left
on
the satellite, because this had been planned in, of course, as a flight plan.
Now, this was not geosynchronous or...
I don't know. It might have. I don't know.
Anyway, it was done.
Yeah, it was done. And it was the plan was for it to be over to U.S. for
I'll be darned.
And it was a Fairchild satellite.
Do you think that maybe it came after his death, or was...
Yeah, I think so. He did a lot of that, you know, that liaison and stuff in the last couple of years. You know, because he left NASA in, I guess, around the 71 time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was three or four years in there when he could work that interface before he got to go. He already knew when he left Huntsville that he had cancer.
Is that right?
Yeah, he knew that. I didn't. I found that out later, but and it got progressively worse, obviously.
So when he went to NASA headquarters, he was aware of that.
Well, when he one of the big things that, well, from his perspective, one of the big reasons when Lee Marshall was, he wanted time to think and dream about the future. And it's really hard to find time to do that when you're running a multi-thousand-man organization, a $2-3 billion a year budget, this type of thing, you know, with all these people wanting to see you and spend time with you, you know, get on your calendar. So his driving influence, other than the fact, of course, that Tom Paine really wanted him to go up there, was you know, really be able to dream about the future and think about the future and have more free time. He didn't really get a lot of extra free time, but that was a thing that he wanted to do when he went up there. He did get some more time in this planning environment. As I indicated, we made trips around to all the NASA centers at least twice that I recall. And, you know, to get each center director and his key staff members how they saw the future, you know, to help, you know, synthesize an agency-wide plan, taking the best ideas from all the different centers. And he did a similar thing with a number of industry people, too.
Mm-hmm.
And other people, like, I remember we had the head of the Maritime Administration over one day for lunch, a nice lunch sitting there in NASA headquarters,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, to get the Maritime Administration talking about how they saw the future. And Werner was, at that time, was thinking very much about satellite navigation for ships, which, of course, today is commonplace with that, you know, with that satellite up there.
Right, positioning system.
Yeah, the position system. This was kind of just in the thinking stages in those days, you know, but Werner was talking to them about how space could really help the maritime world. And he did. I remember having a senior vice president of IBM come talk to us one time about, you know, how they saw the beginning, the future of computers, and how that interfaced with space and all this business. So we had kind of we kind of laid out a fairly significant list of industry leaders to talk to, really, on how space
mm-hmm.
might impinge on all these different. Disciplines around the country, and because Werner wasn't—he wasn't about to just sit around. I mean, he's dynamic. He wanted to go do something. And,
sure.
So it was, in a way, for me, it was a big education too, getting to listen in on all these different discussions with people around the country, and going to all the NASA centers, and hearing what guys like Bob Pickering. And I had Bob Pickering as this is a little anecdote that's. The machine's on it.
Sure.
It's a little anecdote. We went to visit Pickering, JPL, one time. And
is that Bill Pickering?
Bill Pickering.
Okay.
Who was a longtime director of JPL.
Right.
And it turned out that JPL is kind of on a hill, and there's a fairly steep drop, and then there's a big 8 or 10 lane highway, one of the big major interfaces. And then there's another mountain on the opposite side, and Pickering's residence was high up on the other side. And being it was Werner, Pickering invited us to his house for dinner one night, and around the pool, and he had his key staff members, and, you know, this was maybe 20, 25 people. And it turns out that Pickering had this telescope out by his pool, and he could see in his office window from the pool. And in his office, he had a telescope that he could look up at his wife and who was swimming in his pool
guys holding up
right.
Explorer 1.
Yeah, that's out there at the airport.
Picture.
I've got that picture at the airport, you know, in big scale on the wall.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I've seen it.
Yeah, it's on the wall in
I
the main.
I fly a lot, right.
Yeah, it's on the, I guess that's the north wall in that big lobby where you, you know, on the
oh,
south
yes,
side.
Oh, yes, yes.
Where you get your tickets, you know, where
right,
on the,
of course.
If you look back and up, there's that picture.
Oh, I have seen that. That huge mural.
Yeah, that
right.
mural thing, and it's, when you're looking at the mural, it's on the left-hand end.
Okay.
They've got that Explorer 1 satellite that they're holding up. You know, Von Braun and Pickering and a couple other people.
And James Van Allen.
James Van Allen, right. Yeah. And then it's me, him, but Pickering was...
with his telescopes, that's funny.
So there was... Okay. Well, this is a kind of a minor one, but, you know, people used to give Von Braun lots of things. And somebody gave him, you know, and he had to turn most, well, he couldn't keep these. He had to turn all everything over to the Smithsonian or whatever.
Sure.
And somebody gave him a picture of this Indian chief. And
see you, Doug. All right. Take care.
See you here. Somebody gave Von Braun a picture of this Indian chief, and he was real severe looking. And of course, he was nicely framed. It was a fairly large frame, kind of maybe the size of that picture on the right over there across the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of size, but of course a severe-looking Indian. And Von Braun gave that to Mouse to hang in our lunar planning office because, you know, we were in charge of the budget as part of this planning activity. We had our fingers in how Marshall split his budget around it. And Von Braun wanted Miles to look like that and, you know, keep the pennies pinched pretty tightly, you know, and how he spread that money around it. Think of how that Indian looks and how he's really holding on to things.
That's great. Before I forget, you mentioned Arthur Clark.
Right.
Are you aware of whether Clark and Von Braun hit it off well, or
I don't really know that.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
Right.
Very good.
And the other little follow-up.
I do have a picture, which I also gave copied at the school here. I don't know whether he included his book or that, but on that weekend with Clark, you know, there's a picture, and there's about 20-25 of us, and they made a. You know, they made a photograph of us, I guess, on the last day at lunch or whatever, before we're getting ready to break up. And then they made copies, enough copies of this print for all the attendees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, over that lunch, that last lunch, they passed these 25 around, and everybody signed them. So
mm-hmm.
each attendee has a deal with 25 original signatures, you know, and Neil Armstrong was there. And,
yeah.
And, Dale Myers and Noggle, Dr. Noggle. I don't remember all, but I got that moment on my wall in my home office.
Clark was
in that in that group. Was an interesting.
Right. And who did you? Was it Fletcher? Did he come in, or was Lowe still acting administrator when Dr. Von Braun left the agency?
I think Fletcher came.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the decision had been made. You know, Von Braun talked to me about his decision to leave, and it was based on his decision, and I called Eberhardt down here and asked if Eberhardt had the last string out, and, you know, if I could come back.
Right.
And Eberhardt said he'd have to think about it a while. And then it was probably a couple weeks later, we had made a trip, you know, I said, these industry leaders, we'd made a trip to... big aircraft engine manufacturer up in Long Island. But anyway, so Werner was still doing his thing. You know, he hadn't actually left. And Eberhardt called me and told me about the job and assignment, and you know, I could come back. And it was just shortly then that Werner actually left. But there was some short period of overlap. Hatcher coming, and Werner actually leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a kind of a funny story. It's, I don't know, it's not very complimentary to Fletcher, but it was interesting. You know, Fletcher came from the University of Utah.
Right, I remember that.
And when he first came to NASA, you know, he was, you know, he had to learn his way around. And, of course, the budget, NASA's budget's in billions. And Fletcher could never say billions. Everything was millions. And it was the hardest time to get Fletcher to talk billions.
That's funny.
It took a long time before Fletcher could say billions with a straight face.
another league altogether.
Yeah.
How long were you in Washington with the agency?
About a year and a half.
Right.
You know, I went up there when Werner went up there, and I ended up actually leaving a week or so before he did. He obviously was leaving, but you know, when Everhart called me back and said he had, you know, he outlined an assignment he'd like me to take, he was interested in getting me back, and of course, obviously, it was going to break up from there. And after Werner left and I left, it was not very long after that that Fletcher and Lowe, who was still the deputy, decided to break up the office, just abolish the office. And
this long-range planning group.
Yeah, this long-range planning group that Werner was heading up. And, of course, then everybody had to scatter. Did you know a guy by the name of Frank Williams back in those?
Yes.
Well, Frank was
former special assistant to Von Braun.
Yeah.
Like an aide-de-camp at one point.
Yeah, he was one of my professors in this thing. Now, Frank, at the time that Werner went to Washington, Frank had been assigned as the marshal representative at JSC. And so when Werner went to Washington, he took the two of us along, Frank Williams and myself. We were the only two that he brought from Marshall. Really, I was the only one from Marshall per se, but he took Frank out of JSC. So then Frank was left up there as kind of the senior person left in the office when Werner and I had gone. And you know, it was kind of a blow to him, being a long-term civil service employee and so
forth. Sure.
And I guess they had the option for early outs, you know, to abolish the office. So Frank did jump ship and retire at that point on an early out and went to work for Martin down at Michoud and in their long-range plan. And Frank is, well, he's retired now too, relatively recently, but he spent, you know, 10, 12 years trying to sell external tanks in some reconfigured way as the beginnings of a space station.
Mm-hmm.
They had Colonel Banks in the space station.
I'll be damned. Yeah, Frank succeeded Jerry McCall, didn't he, as Von Braun's assistant?
It may have been that early, but yeah, it was Jerry was, I guess, the first one non-civilian.
Right.
I mean, non-military, and then I guess Frank was in there. And then Jim Shepard, and then me, and in a way that was the end. We did have, and I was going to mention his name to you down here, Tom Shanahan.
Tom, how do you spell the last name?
S-H-A-N-E-R.
Okay.
And he's recently retired. And he spent most of his career after Von Braun's days in the, you know, in the science and engineering in a more or less a purely technical job. He was a very young man back in the days that I was Von Braun's assistant. And at that time, you know, I was relatively senior. Tom Shanahan was relatively junior at that time. And Werner decided that he needed, you know, him. Is kind of a derogatory term, but kind of a horse holder. And so we brought Tom into the office, and Tom really did go around with Werner and carry his bags and miscellaneous stuff. And when Werner moved to Washington, you know, Werner had this Mercedes-Benz convertible, that fancy two-seater.
Yes.
Tom got the job of driving it to Washington. You know, they loaded it down, and Werner and Clark flew, but Tom Shanahan got to drive that fancy little car up there. And so, you know, conceivably, Tom might have some things to say, too, about about his relationship for about a year or so with Werner in that regard.
But he was in Washington for about a year.
He was here.
Oh, he was here.
This was about the year before Werner went up there.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, but, you know, the fact that he carried his furniture, helped him carry his furniture up there and drove that car, I mean, he had some fairly intimate relationship with Werner over, in some ways, a short period of time, mm-hmm. but still, it may be worthwhile, I don't know.
And so, is he, he's retired.
Just recently retired. Yeah, he's
in
here.
Area?
He's
okay.
Here. Yeah, he's just recently retired. I'm sure his name will be in the phone book.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Right.
I didn't personally get it, but this is a kind of a funny story. This was relayed to me by Frank Williams, who was present when this story happened. While we were in Washington, Werner had done take some vacation time, and he was going to go out into the not the Potomac, but what's that body of water there?
Chesapeake Bay.
They were going to go fishing in Chesapeake Bay, and they rented some kind of boat. And for some reason, I've always regretted, but for some reason, I had some commitment. I didn't take this trip with him. But they went out there fishing with Frank Williams and a couple other people from the office, from his planning office. And they're going to throw out the anchor. And Werner forgot to tie the end of the anchor. And the anchor and the rope just went.
I'd love to know what he said at that time. Is that right? Oops, the absent-minded professor
right.
or something.
That's my anchor story. I ain't that on this list.
Yeah. Is Frank, you know where Frank Williams is?
My wife has his telephone number somewhere. He's, you know,
You say he went with Martin.
He went with Martin. He's still living in his house down there.
In the New Orleans area?
Yeah, I think he's in Slidell. If I can think of it, I know my wife. We have his number because we still get in touch with him once in a while. I know we have his residence number.
Golly, funny bone there. Maybe let me give you my card as maybe a reminder.
Okay.
I'll put Frank Williams.
Frank Williams, okay. I got one more story and I have one whole page for
you. Okay.
You know, Von Braun was always asked to speak a lot. And when he was here, you know, he could let a few other of us occasionally would make a speech for him. For some reason, he couldn't do one. When he was in Washington, though, particularly in the Tom Paine era, Tom Paine put out an edict of who could and who couldn't speak for Von Braun. And I thought that was kind of an interesting list. An astronaut. Astronauts could speak for Von Braun.
Could speak for him.
Yeah, take one of his speech commitments. Or this guy, Leonard Jastrow. Did you ever hear of Leonard Jastrow?
Yeah, I
he was the director of the Goddard Institute of Space Science. And I can't remember whether I was in New York or Boston. But he was he reported to the Goddard Center Director.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a, you know, high-level scientific type. He was also on this 5-day hideaway for the future. And I was always very impressed with him when I heard him speak a few times. You know, as being a, you know, long, big, broad thinker about the world in general, space in particular. And
was he Dr. Jastrow?
Yeah, Dr. Leonard Jastrow. J-A-S-T-R-O-W, I believe.
Right.
And I think he's retired now, too. But, and I think they closed down that budget squeeze, you can't keep these satellite things going forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting too, is what Tom Payne, who Tom Payne thought could be a speaker substitute.
Oh, I see what you mean. Could come in as a substitute.
Yeah, in other words, Warner had so many commitments on his time this time. One other thing about Warner in Washington, which was rather frustrating to him, very frustrating to him. You know, when he was a center director, he could go out and say more or less anything he wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because after all, that's the role of the center, to propose things.
Sure.
It'd have to be in a decision-making loop. But when he got to Washington, they put constraints on him. I mean, he had to speak the party line. You know, I mean, he was the number three man in the agency in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And so they put constraints on him, the administrator's staff wanted to review his speeches. Well, Warner never liked to repeat a speech verbatim. I mean, he liked to ad lib a lot and stuff.
Sure.
So this made his speeches more stilted and stuff, too, when he was up there.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, that was a shame to see that.
Sure. Getting back to this authorized substitute speaker list, was it only any astronaut and Dr. Jastrow, period?
Sure.
That was it. You know, that may hark back to something that Jim Daniels or someone else told me, that in this area, and Jim said, look, there's nothing anti-Semitic about me, but he said there was this this Jewish clique, and Abe Silverstein was that, within NASA, and fine people, but they some of them had the knife out for Von Braun, and for reasons, if we were in their shoes, maybe we could understand. But the Julian, was it Julian Scheer?
Yeah.
I remember having
that. Yeah, he was
the PAO
public,
chief
PAO, right.
of NASA. That he had a rather active dislike for Von Braun, and a lot of the speaking requests would come through his office to get Von Braun to speak, apparently, and that Julian was loathe to pass along all of these to Von Braun and tried to take some of them for himself, maybe did some cherry picking there, and that which may have prompted Tom to put out that edict.
That could be that could be another reason.
Right.
Okay.
Well, where were we though? You were I know it's on the tape there, but that's all right. Go ahead.
I talked about that. I thought I'd give you the anchor story.
And this is the last thing you were saying. It was after the authorized list of substitute speakers. And I don't think I made a note of that.
This frustration he had over being. Having his, his speech is constrained
right.
To speak the party line, and he couldn't get too far away from the prepared text.
Right.
He was here. He was pretty freewheeling, and he had a very good friend in Congress, Tiger T. Remember Tiger T?
Yes, I do.
Tiger was from Texas, which I'm sure, in a way, was responsible in some ways. Obviously, Lyndon Johnson and JSC where it is. But at the same time, Teague and Warner were good buddies. They used to go fishing together. They go up to Canada and go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Warner got his oar in the water, in the
with
back.
Him.
Yeah. Tiger Teagan, who was chairing the House Authorization Committee on Space, which was really good.
Sure.
Teague was a real good friend back in those days.
But that was Representative Tiger Teague.
Tiger Teague.
What state was he from?
Texas. Hometown was College Station.
I'll be damned. Jesus, Bear Bryant.
Yeah.
And he chaired
the House Authorization Committee at that time. I know it had space. I don't know what else it may have had in it.
And they went, did you say fishing?
They went fishing. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Now, was this when Von Braun was here,
here
or?
This is when he was here.
Right. But that illustrates, doesn't it, how he recognized the political aspects,
yeah.
and that was a big part of his job.
Oh yeah, they had to, you know, he had to, you know, every year, I guess, you know, for a long number of years, he had to testify before Congress, you know, in the center, had big budgets, and, and in those days, and I don't know whether they still do that or not, you know, how much they delegate, but in those days,
sure. In
Apollo, congressmen really looked forward to having Warner testify, and, you know, I got involved to some degree in helping prepare some of that testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy, I don't know if you remember Ray Klein.
Yes, I do.
Ray was got heavily involved in the testimony and writing his very important speeches. I mean, this is a little bit of distinction. You know, like if Von Braun was going to talk to a Rotary Club or some civic group somewhere, public affairs could write a speech. But if you're going to testify where it really counted, you know, before Dale Myers or in the Congress or something, Ray Klein got to write the speech.
Mm-hmm.
It made that very clear distinction.
Sure.
And then Jim Webb actually stole Klein away from us down here, you know. Remember that exercise where there was some discussion and the press got all excited here locally? You may have written some of those articles about the Senator's going to move to California.
Oh, I did, in fact.
Yeah.
If Alabama didn't shape up in
yeah.
the civil rights area.
And what happened was... subsequent to that, you know, then the locals wanted Jim Webb to come back and apologize or set the record straight or
yep.
something. And Jim Webb absolutely wasn't about to apologize, you know. I mean, that wasn't in his makeup. But what he did do, he asked Werner if Werner had somebody who really was up on the local situation and could help him prepare his next speech. I mean, he did agree to come back down here, and he was going to give another speech without any apologies or anything, but he wanted to have somebody from locally who could help him avoid any landmines, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so Werner nominated Ray Klein, and so Klein went up there and spent a couple of weeks with Webb and with Webb's these speechwriters, you know, working
mm-hmm.
on that thing. And then Klein actually flew back down here on the same airplane with Webb when he came back to deliver that speech. And this apparently got Webb and Klein sufficiently, you know, to know each other, that it was shortly after that exercise that Webb called Werner and asked him if he could steal Klein.
I'll be damned.
And so Klein went up to Washington about a year or so before Werner went to Washington. And so Klein was up there in the administrative side of NASA headquarters. And then when Werner and I and Frank Williams went up there, we managed to steal Klein to join Werner's long-range planning office for a while, you know. And then when Werner left and I left and they broke up the office, Klein went back to whatever he was doing. He ultimately became the associate administrator for management of the agency.
Mm-hmm. And that's K-L-I-N-E.
Right. Right. There was another C-L-I-N-E who was a lab director out there.
Oh,
for a while,
okay.
Too. But this is K-L-I-N-E.
Yeah, I remember so clearly. I got word that Webb... I was the one that wrote those stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Webb was going to speak to at some country club, golf and country club in the Quad Cities area.
I think it was Florence, mm-hmm. and I went over there and kind of, and I don't know why Webb was going to be there. I went over there and I didn't crash the party, but I just sort of ambled into the room, and I don't think Mr. Webb knew that anybody from the press was there. And anyway, he made these forceful statements mm-hmm. about Wallace to some extent, and that you know, NASA has this strong presence here in Alabama and in the South, and here Alabama or its chief executive is attacking Washington and the federal establishment, and y'all better and better do more in the area of desegregation than you're doing, or we will ship things out of here, even if it's to New Orleans where things are sweeter. And wrote that story, and then the stuff hit the fan.
Excuse me, you fellas finished with your notes?
Yes, we are, and I know we apologize, y'all need to clean up here. I wrote that, the paper played that up big, and here comes the reaction, and then I was there for Mr. Webb's return
yeah.
visit.
Well, that's how Ray Klein fit into that thing.
I'll be damned.
You know, Ray went on to be, just to get to another aside from the Von Braun thing, but Ray was played a real key role in all of Von Braun's important speeches when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
The last several years he was here. Klein is an outstanding individual. But when he was Associate Administrator for Management at NASA headquarters, it turns out that all of the federal agencies have some kind of a group that gets together periodically, consisting of the heads of administration from all federal agencies, DOD and Interior, Agriculture, what have you. And somehow through that process, Ray, being the dynamic guy that Ray Klein was, he became the chairman of that management group.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the chairman of that management group at the time that Jimmy Carter was having all kinds of problems with GSA, the General Service Administration.
Right.
And, you know, there were a bunch of senior officials in GSA that were under indictment and you know, for, I don't know, bonding with materials and stuff. And anyway, Carter found somebody politically astute, for whatever reason, you know, being negative, and I never met this gentleman, but this is a rumor, you know, he was a used car salesman out of Boston, you know, but I mean, he must have been a pretty high level, you know, had a lot of used car lots. But anyway, Jimmy Carter made him the administrator of GSA, but he made Ray Klein the deputy administrator of GSA,
mm-hmm.
and particularly picked on Klein because of his management knowledge and chairing this group of all the managers, senior managers across the government. And so Klein spent about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. He made the transition from the Carter to the
Reagan.
But the Reagan years.
Yeah.
Yeah, he transitioned from Carter to Reagan and stayed on as a deputy administrator of GSA.
Mm-hmm.
And he's retired now, too. But I thought recognition of how sharp Ray Klein was.
Yeah, sure is.
I actually hired him too. He was working for the Army down here in the Mouse era. We brought him over from the Army, transferred him to NASA.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting down.
Okay.
And I could say the Tom Sheener story. We've been to Montel, the conference in the year 2000. We talked about that thing.
And that was held in what year?
That was in. I think that was in the spring of 70.
That was that 5-day
conference at Wallops.
Right.
I think I'm most of this stuff done. I think I've covered all these things except just one point here. You know, Von Braun was scheduled to go to the LBJ Ranch for dinner 1 week after the Kennedy assassination, you know, and of course it got canceled, but Von Braun was, you know, he was working at the highest levels of the government. LBJ was vice president.
Sure.
And Von Braun had been there a couple of times previously, you know, working that interface. This is when he was still, this is when he's still here.
Hmm.
But anyway, that's the last thing I had formally written on my list.
Before the assassination, Von Braun was to go to the LBJ branch. Huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know what would have happened if he'd have been able to go there. You know what effect that would have had on history. But.
And I guess. I guess that never. I mean, that was never rescheduled. After. Johnson ascended to the presidency, right?
Never rescheduled.
And he had not been to that ranch before.
He had been to the ranch before. You know, I don't know exactly what happened, may or may not have happened, but he had been there before.
Now, is that as a house guest?
Yeah. Well, I don't know where he spent the night or not. I can't answer that.
Right. And was that? As a part of a meeting, well, you know, what by that I mean a group.
Probably part of a group.
Right.
I doubt he'd go there by himself.
Right. I'd love to know, and maybe you know what Von Braun thought of Johnson.
I don't really.
Right.
So anyway, that's my list.
Yeah. We're good. Jay, that's very helpful. All I gotta do is put all this together now, and I do want to bring this revised edition out early next year, and it'll probably be done locally in some fashion because of the continuing high interest locally in Dr. Von Braun.
And of course, there's that
next with the celebration.
Yeah, the 30
up.
Years of Apollo landing.
I
know, you know, with the NASA Alumni League hat on, I know the city has asked us for a bit. And you know, Ed Buckley's our chairman now. I was the president of that for 2 years, but Buckley has taken it over.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
He's the president of the NASA Alumni League locally this year. And last year, I guess it's been a year and a half now since I left there. And Ed has appointed Bob Lindstrom to be the interface to the city. And I know Bob's been, you know, at the house. The Alumni League ought to participate in such a celebration.
Bob Lundquist.
Lindstrom. Now his wife is quite ill now, so he's...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she has cancer of some sort. Mary Lindstrom.
Mm-hmm. Too bad.